nation is at war with Islamic fascists who will use any means to destroy those of us who love freedom, to hurt our nation.
President George W. Bush recently talking about, and for the first time using the term Islamic fascists, repeating many of the things he said before. We're going to be talking about Islam during this half hour of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back for the third hour of the program. Dr. Alvin Schmidt joins us. He was mentioned rather glowingly by a guest a little earlier today on Issues, Etc. with connection to multiculturalism. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Thank you.
We had a high volume of email on Sunday night when we talked with Dr. Ergun Kaner and with you for those 2 hours, and we simply, because of the volume of telephone calls as well, were not able to get to the email, so much of the email that we were getting. So I'd like to go through some of that this afternoon, if we could, beginning with Jeff, who writes from McKinney, Texas, and he asks this, Dr. Schmidt, postmodern Western culture seems to have the same effect on many Muslims and Christians. Doctrine is softened, crucial differences are ignored, and political/social aims outweigh the importance of doctrinal purity. This is important in light of Islam's teaching of abrogation. Early, soft references to the treatment of non-Muslims are painted as the real teaching of Islam, while all the later teachings, much more violent and aggressive, give many Muslims their justification for attack. As many Muslims rediscover their doctrine, Western Christians seem to be content to ignore theirs. While a rediscovery of Orthodox Christian doctrine would hardly lead us to a military advancement, it certainly would lead us to much more aggressive pursuit of the truth, not politically correct, and a true presentation of the great lies and harms of Islam. First of all, if you could explain in a little more detail the Islamic doctrine of abrogation, and do you think that Jeff is right when he says that Western Muslims ignore that doctrine and favor the softer teachings of the earlier parts of the Quran?
Yes, the doctrine of abrogation is mentioned a couple of times in the Quran. Basically, it amounts to the fact that early passages that were written while Muhammad was in Mecca before he took the Hijra, his flight or trip to Medina, when he was still not in control and was trying to get people to follow his religion, called Islam, by means of peaceful persuasion, preaching and the like. But he was not very successful. A number of years, from roughly 614 to 622, he gained about 70 followers, which finally left with him in 622 to go to Medina. And when he got to Medina, he changed his tactics. In fact, all kinds of scholars, even those who are Muslims, admit this fact. One being, for example, Karen Armstrong, says that when he got to Medina, he changed his methodology. The methodology now was using the sword to gain converts, and he used it very, very effectively. So the passages that were then supposedly revealed to him from God via Gabriel, in Medina and thereafter, are all violent, or as often is referred to as the sword passages. They begin being listed already in the ninth chapter or surah of the Quran. And the later chapters annul or abrogate the early verses, like, for example, one that one often hears a lot, that Islam is tolerable of all religions. Well, that was an early passage that has been abrogated, annulled.
So are Western Muslims turning that on its head and saying, no, the earlier, softer, more tolerant passages of the Quran really ought to be used to mitigate the later sayings of Muhammad vis-a-vis the infidel?
Well, that's an interesting question. I firmly believe that the people who are putting forth this argument, namely that we should go by those early passages, is simply a device, a method to deceive the Westerners who really don't know the Quran. I don't know of any informed Muslim that would say the abrogation or the doctrine of abrogation is invalid. And if it's valid, obviously those early passages have been abrogated. They no longer mean anything. They, for example, however, are cited because, as I said, the public is essentially ignorant about the Quran, and so it looks like they are good and kind and peaceful by those passages, conveniently ignoring those others, which, by the way, are far more numerous and annul those early passages. So I'm not so sure that this isn't anything else but a means of trying to deceive the public to make them think that Islam is indeed a peaceful, tolerant religion.
Ruthie writes this: why is the mainstream media completely oblivious to the truth about Islam? It's only on Christian radio and a few other outlets that we hear the truth about Islam. Why are they protecting Islam, asks Ruthie.
Well, that's a very good question, you know, and I can only surmise. One is, I believe, that, for example, they have not read the Quran and like to believe what they are told by what we just heard a little while ago, that when some passages are cited from the early days in Mecca, that Islam is basically peaceful and the like, that they go by that. There's a second reason, and I think this is well documented in a number of ways. The media, those who do know, and I don't know how many there are, I suspect there are not very many, are afraid to say anything that's really truthful, namely about the violent passages in the Quran, afraid for two reasons. Number one, they will no longer be seen as politically correct. Number two, they may even lose their job. And so they don't look for the truth, and they don't read the Quran. They don't read the Bible either when they misquoted and the like. And so ignorance prevails, and ignorance plays into the hands of those, for example, who want to deceive us about what Muslim or Islam really is all about.
Mike in St. Louis wrote this via the email. He says, do you think the false prophet of the end times is in reference to Muhammad himself?
Well, he's definitely one of the false prophets. Whether he is the false prophet or not, I don't know. I'm not prepared to say. And you can say perhaps this is one of the plagues that will plague Christianity in terms of false prophets. The good Lord Jesus Christ, that is, predicted that there would be in the latter days people who would claim to be representatives of God, even creating miracles and wonders. And so it could very well be that he is. And I guess I'll have to leave it at that. Who knows for sure?
Josh in Milwaukee, this is what he writes via the email. Why do Muslims revere Muhammad so much? The Islamic statement of faith is, there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. What's with the obsession with Muhammad? Christians don't mention apostles like John or Paul, or past prophets like Isaiah and Moses in their articles of faith, such as the Apostles' Creed. Pre-20th century scholars often referred to Islam as Mohammedism or the Mohammedan. Due to the Danish cartoon reaction earlier this year around the world, many Muslims seem to be more concerned with Muhammad's image than Allah's. Can you explain why?
Yeah, quite right. Muhammad is held in high regard, maybe even revered, however they would say not worshipped, and I think that's true, that he's not worshipped, but he's held in very high regard as though he were, in many cases, worshipped, because he is the prophet. He is the greatest prophet. He is the last prophet. He is greater than Jesus, whom they also call prophet. But Jesus is a lesser prophet. And so they revere him because also they revere him because he was an example to them to, for example, fight the infidel, the unbelievers, which he did. As even Bernard Lewis mentions in his book, Muhammad was the first man who practiced the jihad. And very, very true. So he gave them an example. He gave them the Quran. He gave them the hadith, the traditions of Muhammad, basically the sayings and traditions of him. And so they revere him because the man, even though he's not seen as someone that, who is God, as Christians would say about Jesus Christ, he is nevertheless sort of almost elevated to that position without them directly saying so.
We're talking with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. If you've got a question or comment on Islam, our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, or send us your email at issuesetc@kfuo.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. This is what Max has to say. If a Muslim needs to follow Islamic law to lead the righteous life, but is unable to do so when they are in the minority, can we expect acts of futility such as suicide bombings in the USA? Or perhaps American Islam is not following strict Islamic law. What do Muslims believe about... Oh, well, let's take that question first, and then we'll get to a second question that he has about creation and the origins of life. This came up on Sunday night. Western Muslims ought to be following Sharia law, but are not able to do that. First of all, do they feel a compulsion to do it? And second of all, should it lead us to expect what the emailer says are acts of futility like suicide bombing?
Well, I don't know if they're acts of futility or not, or if feeling that they have the possibility to gain the upper hand. I really don't know. Your question about the Sharia law, yes, Sharia law is very much operative in, for example, the best, where's operative most purely, so to speak, is in Saudi Arabia. And, of course, it is operating in most other Muslim countries to varying degrees. And it is the law that supersedes all man-made laws. And it's a goal. In fact, many Muslims in Britain have recently argued for the fact that they should have the right within their own community or a part of the city in which they live to govern themselves by Sharia law. It arose recently in Canada that some of the disputes among Muslims ought to be settled by their Sharia law. So, yes, Sharia law is a very high goal for them, and it's one that where Islam takes control, that law will take effect. And it's that particular law that has gruesome penalties spelled out, for example, relative to adultery, relative to, for example, apostasy or blasphemy, in most instances called for the death penalty, the stoning. And even the example that we saw a few months ago with Abdul Rahman, the man in Afghanistan who became a Christian a number of years earlier, there again was going to be judged by the Sharia law.
The second question that Max has is, what do Muslims believe about creation, the origins of life, and man?
Yeah, that's a good question. The Quran is full of contradictions, and when you look at the creation of man, it has got apparently more contradictions there than in a lot of other places or regarding a lot of other teachings. For example, the Quran does speak of a six-day creation in three different places. But in another place, it speaks about the creation having taken place in 2 days. And still another place, it speaks about the creation having taken place in 4 days. Take your pick, I say. Which is it? No coherent, no consistent message. It also talks about man having been created from clay in one chapter, from water in another chapter, from dust in another chapter, and in still another chapter, it talks about man having been created out of nothing. Again, one has to say, take your pick. Which is it? So the doctrine of creation, you know, you can cite a passage, for example, that comes close to creation account of Genesis, namely the one that man was made out of clay, which comes pretty close to the fact of what it would say in Genesis. But then if you look at the other passages that contradict that. Also, the doctrine of creation, if you want to call it that in the Quran, is, again, not only contradictory, but very inconsistent and, in many cases, incomplete in terms of what God all created. It doesn't spell out in detail, as does Genesis 1 and 2.
What about, and this is, again, another question from Max via the email, what about the Muslims' beliefs regarding the end times and the final judgment?
Well, they believe that there will be a resurrection of the dead. That is clearly taught in the Quran, and Muhammad clearly taught that. But, and that, you know, God will judge the people on that day. And the details, of course, are not too specific. As we mentioned the other night, Sunday night on television, I mean on the interview, pardon me, a Muslim is never sure of whether he is going to go to heaven when he dies, except those who engage in a suicidal bombing attempt and die for them, die for some cause. All the others on Judgment Day, how they're going to be judged is not really spelled out very clearly.
This is what Ken in Herman, Missouri writes. What is Islamic fascism? I think of Hitler and Mussolini. No such character exists today in Islam. They are all clerics of a sort. Totalitarianism. Is this what the Quran teaches? Are they trying to gain control of the total world with their Sharia law? Let's explore that a little bit. I mean, most people do think of Hitler and Mussolini when they think of fascism, and they say, golly, there are no Hitlers, you know, one central character like Nazism had in Islam, but is there a fascist element nonetheless?
Well, one could say that Muhammad perhaps was a pretty good example of a Hitler or Mussolini. It's just that most people don't know too much about him. And if you want to go to more modern times, the media itself has already referred to Ahmadinejad in Iran being a kind of a Hitler, in that he wants to destroy the Jews, denies the Holocaust happened. So is the term Islamic fascism accurate? Well, in past history, given not only Muhammad, but many of the caliphs who succeeded him in terms of what they did. Even, for example, in Spain in 711, when Tariq Zayed conquered or began to conquer Spain, he captured a number of Goth Christians, cut them to pieces, put the meat pieces in a cauldron, and warned the others to go and tell what would happen to them if they resisted him. Well, that's a pretty good example of what we would call a Hitler. Now, this goes back to the 8th century. One can find many cases in Islamic history that would parallel, for example, Hitler. Hitler, as we know, made the Jews wear a yellow Star of David. Well, that's something that the Muslims created already back in the 9th century, 300 years after Muhammad. Again, there are a lot of parallels, a lot of similarities. I don't think the term is inappropriate.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Waiting on the line in Las Vegas, Frank, welcome.
Thanks. I really appreciate listening to Dr. Schmidt, and I enjoyed Professor Kaner as well. Very enlightening. I watched the news media interviewing the various imams, and there seems to be a total miscommunication. Now, unless I'm mistaken, having listened to you, Dr. Schmidt, and Professor Kaner earlier, is it valid in Islam to lie to unbelievers in order to obtain their objective? And if that's true, then the news media is being duped because they're approaching everything from a Western mindset, assuming that the person that they're interviewing is doing their best to answer honestly.
Yes.
Frank, it's a good question. And Dr. Schmidt, our time grows short here. Please, to Frank's question.
Yes, the answer is yes. In fact, even the Quran says that God deceived man, and in other words, even God was capable of lying. And it's very much a part of the doctrine. And the other comment, what was it? He asked one other significant portion.
But he does want to know, is the media being duped,
yes,
thinking that they're getting honest answers?
Yes, and that's a very good point. The media continually sees Islam in the light of Christianity's influence in our society. And that's why they are so gullible in wanting to believe that it's a religion of peace. They can't quite believe that there is or would be a religion that is very contrary to Christianity and is ridden with violence and advocates violence. Even though they do not know the scriptures and oftentimes don't have any respect for Christianity, they're nevertheless influenced by it, and that's why they tend to respond that way and let the imams, as they are interviewed, get away with the things that they tell them.
Two quick final questions. Connection with that last one, how prevalent is the ethic the end justifies the means in Islam generally?
It's the basic policy. It's just the way it operates. The end justifies the means. That's why Muhammad said, I'm the last of the prophets, and I'm sent with the sword. Why was he sent with the sword? To conquer the whole area in which he lived, and he did. And it's been continuing ever since.
Then finally, with only about a minute here, we had a caller yesterday to the program that was curious about Western representatives of Islam, care in particular, and she thought she had remembered hearing you say that these representatives of Islam in the West are largely Wahhabists. What does that mean?
Well, that's a sect that goes back to 150 years out of Saudi Arabia, and it's a group that has been very violently oriented within Islam, but has, you know, it helped bring to power the Saudi or House of Saudi, for example, in Saudi Arabia, and today. Saudi Arabia leadership and the like doesn't like to identify itself with it, but it's a sect that's 150 years old, was geared to violence and wanted to purify Islam where they saw it not being as pure as it should be.
Tomorrow on the program, there's going to be an excellent two-hour conversation on Islam with Dr. Schmidt, our guest here in this half hour, and Dr. Ergun Kaner, both of them discussing with you and with our callers the issue of Islam in some detail. Make sure you tune in for that tomorrow on the program. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When we come back from this break, we're going to be playing Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week with you. We're going to play those sound bites, 1, 2, 3, 4. We want you to listen to them carefully. Take note of which one is your soundbite of the week. Give us a call, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727 or email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Tell us which is your soundbite of the week and why. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Coming up, our contestants are, if you were listening, Ole Anderson. We were talking about Christian fraud, and he's, in soundbite number one, going to give an answer to a simple question. Would he do business with someone who's got a Jesus fish on his business card? Dr. Ergun Kaner, his reaction to those who say that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. That'll be soundbite number two. Soundbite number three, Dr. Richard Stuckwish, on the Christian message behind the Harry Potter novels. And finally, soundbite number four, coming up after the break, Bob Leko. I had asked him near the end of our conversation recently, since we're going to be talking with Marilyn Hickey, one of the big Word Faith teachers, coming up next month on Issues, Etc., if he had one question to ask Marilyn Hickey, what would it be? And we'll find out what that is at soundbite number four, coming up on the other side of the break. You call us and tell us which of these is your soundbite of the week. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Many Christians understand the theological impact of 16th century Christian reformer Martin Luther. Fewer understand Luther's lasting impact on the world of politics and of thought. Our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August is an overview of Luther's life, thought, and work. It's called Luther's World of Thought. You can find this book at our website, issuesetc.org. It's right on the homepage. Or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and find out more about Luther's World of Thought, our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. This hardback book is $29.99 plus shipping and handling. Our website address again, issuesetc.org, and the number for Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
6 days. So why did God take so long?
Answers with Ken Ham, a popular speaker on the topic of creation and evolution.
Well, Ken, you had a rather novel way of putting it there. You wouldn't normally think of 6 days of creation as a long period of time.
Actually, when you think about it, 6 days is a really long time for the all-powerful God to take to create the universe. God is infinite in power and wisdom. And let's be honest, an infinite God could create the whole universe in 6 hours, 6 minutes, or even 6 seconds. In fact, God could create everything in no time at all. But in the context of the Hebrew language that Genesis was written in, it's obvious that God created everything in 6 days of approximately 24 hours in length. So the question I ask is, why did God take 6 days to create everything? Well, he gives us the answer. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 11, we're told that because God created everything in 6 days and rested for one, we're to do the same. In other words, this is why we have a 7-day week. If God created everything in 6 billion years and rested for 1 billion years, well, that would make for a strange week. So you see, the Bible makes it clear why God took as long as 6 days. He created a pattern for us to follow, and that's why we have our 7-day week.
Does this mean, then, that the universe is not billions of years old? It's a topic that Dr. Jason Lyle of our staff has tackled head-on. Read his free booklet right on our website, AnswersRadio.com. AnswersRadio.com.
Todd Wilkin here, talking with Dr. Dean Wenthe, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Wenthe, tell us about Concordia Theological Seminary as a worldwide outreach.
We have, at latest count, about 23 different countries represented on our campus. We have a full-time staff member teaching in Lithuania, another in Siberia, and then our resident faculty teaches regularly in Kenya, in Haiti. We just recently received an invitation to teach in Madagascar. So our commitment is to be a light on the hill and to broadcast the light of Christ into all the world.
For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit them on the web at www.ctsfw.edu.
Listen and speak with love. On the next Focus on the Family, Dr. James Dobson presents a message by professor and marriage counselor Dr. Paul Faulkner on the basic principles of communication in marriage. Find out what hinders effective contact and the message. Practical and proven on the next Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back for the last half hour of Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week is the game that's ahead. We call it a game. I mean, that's what it is. It's intended to be lighthearted and not cause you to think too much. Although, we always want our listeners to think a little bit. And Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week is intended to review a little bit of the audio that we've had in the course of a broadcast week. We bring forth what we think are the brightest parts of the broadcast week for one reason or another. Sometimes it's something we disagree with. Sometimes it's something that we find humorous. Sometimes it's something that is profound. Sometimes it's something we really do agree with. But we bring it forth for one reason or another. We put them together. We play them for you. And then we ask you to choose from those four, and today there's four, your soundbite of the week. You do that by giving us a call, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, or by emailing us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's hit the ground running. Oh, by the way, the best caller, not the person who chooses the soundbite of the week, but the best caller, you know, telling us why and then giving us a good reason why it's the soundbite of the week, they get an Issues Etc. travel mug. We'll just make sure you get it. Ole Anthony was with us earlier this week. And what Ole Anthony does is he has basically dedicated the better part of his career to rooting out and discovering what he calls religiously based fraud. And he was in the news recently, and a story was in the news recently about religiously based fraud. It's a $2 billion business, by the way. Some of the biggest names in Christianity have been taken in and their people. We had Ole Anthony on to talk about that. And beginning in our conversation, I asked him one simple question. A salesman comes to you, wants to sell you something. His business card's got a Jesus fish on it. Are you more or less likely to buy from him and do business with him?
Well, either way, you've got to do the due diligence. I would even go further. Anyone that says they're a Christian store, you shouldn't buy from them. You can no more have a Christian store than you can have a Christian tree.
That's soundbite number one this week on Issues Etc. If you want to vote for it, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can't say he's too optimistic about people using their Christianity as a business tactic or a sales tactic. He's seen too much of the dark side of that to buy into it. Soundbite number two comes from Dr. Ergun Kaner. We've been talking a lot about him lately. This is his reaction to those who say that Muslims and Christians worship the same God.
No Muslim in his right mind would ever believe this. It's usually just some touchy-feely, scratch-and-sniff Christian, quote-unquote, who spouts this type of silliness. Hey, you know, we're talking about the same God. There's never been one Muslim. And I've had now, approaching my 100th debate, I have never met a single Muslim who believes that the Allah of the Quran and the Jehovah God of the Bible are the same God. Look, they deny the Father heart of God. They deny the divinity of the Son. They deny the person of the Holy Spirit. Exactly what part of God do they get right? They deny the Trinity itself. They deny the divinity of the Son, the God-man nature, his atoning work, him as the Lamb, the Agnus Dei. Exactly when do we draw the line and say, you know, maybe they modified it? Islam is medieval Mormonism. It's exactly what it is. You cannot change the nature of God and still be talking about the same God. Joseph Smith and Muhammad did the exact same thing. They studied the nature of God as professed in Christianity and then denied him and made one up out of whole cloth.
Soundbite number two from Dr. Ergun Kaner. He got two jewels in there, by the way. I mean, I just got to point it out. Scratch and sniff Christians. I've never heard that one before. I'd love to explore that with him. And saying that Islam is medieval Mormonism. It's soundbite number two. Is it your soundbite of the week? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Two down, two to go. Here's soundbite number three from Dr. Richard Stuckwish on the Christian message in the Harry Potter novels.
I think that Rowling was purposely subtle, that she didn't broadcast this, although she's always been honest about it, I believe, when she's been asked about it. I personally believe that once the last book comes out, a lot of these things are going to be far more obvious. I think that Harry is finally going to defeat Voldemort by sacrificing himself, and that this is the way in which Voldemort's defeat is going to be accomplished, and that in one way or another, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, Harry will be shown to live after death, because this whole notion of the resurrection and the life after death is prominent.
That's Dr. Richard Stuckwish, and that's soundbite number three. Is it your soundbite of the week? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You don't have to agree with it, by the way. You can adamantly disagree, and it can still be your soundbite of the week because you disagree. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. And here's soundbite number four. It comes from our good friend Bob Leko. I asked him, since we're going to be talking with Marilyn Hickey, a Big Word Faith teacher, coming up next month, and Bob used to be a Word Faith pastor, what one question would he ask Marilyn Hickey?
I would ask her why every month, and I've been on her mailing list, although recently I've been taken off, but I have been on her mailing list in the past for years, every month she would send out a new point of contact, whether it was a plastic replica widow's mite, blessed water, anointed oil, pieces of thread. I have all of these things. And I would ask her why she sends these gimmicks out to people every month. And she'll say in her letters, these are not gimmicks. The Lord has directed me to do this. Well, if the first one worked in January, why do I need one in February? She uses a company out of Tulsa that generates these things. It's the same company that Bob Tilton uses, because they get the same gimmicks from both ministries with almost identical letters.
That's soundbite number four, Bob Leko. It's Thursday, August the 17th. Let's hear from you. Which is your soundbite of the week? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. You know, although I'm not going to vote in Soundbite of the Week, I do have to make note of Bob's question, because we will actually be talking with Marilyn Hickey coming up later next month. She's agreed to do an interview, and I would like to ask her that question. Why does she send out all the points of contact, the prayer clause, the anointing oil, and why does she send out one every month? It seems as though if it's good for January, it would be good for February, too. Our first Soundbite of the Week, Ole Anthony answering the simple question of whether or not he'd do business with someone who has a Jesus fish on their business card. Dr. Ergun Kaner is soundbite number two, his reaction to those who say that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. Soundbite number three is Dr. Richard Stuckwish on the Christian message that he says is behind the Harry Potter novels and he believes will become evident when the last novel is written. And soundbite number four, Bob Leko, one question he'd like to ask Marilyn Hickey: why all the prayer cloths, why all the points of contact, and why one every month? It's soundbite number four. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Sunday night on the program, rapture theology is going to be the subject. Dr. Reed Lessing of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis will be our guest. Not only the rapture itself, but the whole theology that surrounds the teaching of the secret rapture that forms the backbone of so much of the Left Behind series of novels and all the other end times entertainment that's out there. We'll be talking about it Sunday night on Issues Etc. on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis. That's from 10 to 11 on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis. By the way, before we go to the phone calls for Soundbite of the Week or to the email, we've got a guest here in the studio. Move up on the microphone, if you would, Courtney. Courtney Coons has been with us for the entire 3 hours today. I hope we don't scare her off. And Courtney has been a longtime listener to Issues Etc. And she shows the quality of the Issues Etc. listener because she's getting ready to go and do her master's degree at Harvard University. Yes, a round of applause for Courtney. Courtney, welcome.
Thank you.
You were a little worried because you thought people might think you were 7 years old when you talked on the air, but don't let that worry you. What are you going to be studying there at Harvard?
It will be a master's in theological studies with an emphasis in Christianity and culture.
Are you a little nervous about going all the way out to Harvard to do this?
Yes, for many reasons. I know it's going to be challenging just being far away from home in a different culture and also in a different atmosphere than I'm used to, much more liberal atmosphere.
Now, you have kind of been prepping yourself a little bit for your Harvard days by studying Greek here at Concordia Seminary throughout the summer, haven't you?
Yes, Dr. Jeff Oswald has been teaching my class, and it's going pretty well. The qualifier's coming up next week.
You feeling confident about it, or what do you think?
I never feel too confident until after the test. Usually it goes fine.
Something tells me a girl who can get into Harvard doesn't have a problem taking tests. I mean, it's a wild guess, but I imagine you'll probably do better than you think.
Well, it's been a good lesson in humility and perseverance to take this class.
So what pointed you toward religious studies, a master's in religious studies and things like that at Harvard? What pointed you there?
Well, I have been listening to Issues Etc. for the past 2.5 years, and when I found out that there is a master's program in Christianity and culture, I thought, well, that will cover the issues that I've been loving to listen to the last few years on the program. And so I gave it a shot, and Issues Etc. has given me the confidence to, I guess they gave me the confidence to apply, knowing that I'd been taught trustworthy teachings of God's Word.
Well, that is very gratifying to hear. Do you want to say hi to anybody?
I guess I'd like to say hi to my Uncle Bill, who's a pastor in Springfield, Missouri, as well as my whole family.
All right. And you are from someplace between Springfield and Joplin, Missouri, aren't you?
Yes. I live in the country, but I went to church in Lockwood, Missouri at Emmanuel Lutheran.
All right. You know, it's very gratifying to have an Issues Etc. listener headed off to Harvard. Usually it's our guest. Maybe one of these days, Courtney will be back as a guest. Get that master's degree. Come on back. And one day she'll be teaching the rest of our listeners in matters of religious studies. And stay in touch with us, please. You can always listen on the Internet, you know.
Yes, I will. I will definitely be doing that.
And thanks for sitting in for three. You don't have to go anyplace, but thanks for sitting in for these 3 hours. You've been very patient. It amazes me how if I wouldn't have the patience to sit and watch someone else jibber-jabber for 3 hours.
We're playing, my pleasure.
Thank you very much. We're playing Soundbite of the Week. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, if you want to know which of these sound bites is your sound bite of the week and why, issues etc at kfuo.org. Up first, Frank from Las Vegas. Hi, Frank.
Yes, Pastor. I've got to go with Professor Kaner. The reason is his message goes to the heart of Christianity, which is the gospel. I'm surrounded by a culture which cannot distinguish between gods. And Professor Kaner hits the nail on the head. In Christianity, we profess that we worship the only one and true God as revealed in Holy Scripture, and that is the Lord Jesus Christ. And we have problems in our culture with syncretism and prayer and mixed communities. And like he said, Mormonism is nothing but medieval Islam. Our culture seems to be confused. They don't realize that Christianity is unique and professes to have the truth. And there's only one truth. You can't all be right. And so for that reason, I'm going to go with Professor Kaner.
Well, thank you, Frank. Hang on the line for a second, Frank. I know the culture is confused, but why do you think Christians are confused about a basic issue of which God they worship? It seems as though they're as confused about the God they worship as the one that the Muslims worship.
Well, they think that when they pray that God is the great modem in the sky, and believers or unbelievers or whoever you're worshiping, God will sort them out. And whereas the Christian message is that God is only pleased in his Son and those united with him in baptism and by grace through faith. And that message is not loud and clearly taught in evangelical Protestantism or any of the Protestant faiths that I'm familiar with. And it's only my acquaintance in recent years with Lutheranism and the Lutheran confessions that I see the truth. They refuse to waver from the truth as revealed in Scripture, and all the other religions, to one extent or another, become accommodating to the culture.
Frank, thank you very much for the call. Frank votes for Dr. Ergun Kaner, soundbite number two, his reaction to those who say that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues etc at kfuo.org. Anne's calling from Crestwood. Hi, Anne. Which is your soundbite of the week?
Well, I am hooked on Harry Potter, so I was glad to hear Dr. Stuckwish say that that he saw the self-sacrifice, and that's what he's kind of foretelling, that Harry's going to give his life, more or less. And I saw that in the kids being so brave and willing to give up their lives and to face evil despite harm to themselves. And in this era where we need heroes so much, that's kind of a nice one. And in Christianity, there's a lot of churches, I guess, that are poo-pooing the Harry Potter series because of the magic. But there's something that supersedes that, I think, in all the books that we've read and the movies we've seen.
Are you confident in Dr. Stuckwish's expectation? He says that he thinks in the last novel, it might even become clear even to the critics of the Harry Potter novels that J.K. Rowling is trying to show that self-sacrifice as a metaphor, if you will, for the Christian message.
Boy, I don't know. Maybe that's a stretch, but it sure is an interesting thought.
We will wait and see. We will find out sooner or later. Anne, thank you very much.
Thank you.
She votes for soundbite number three. It is a soundbite you won't hear anywhere else on Christian radio, I guarantee you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Chris in Carson City, Nevada writes this via the email. As a Wittenberg Door fan, by the way, Ole Anthony has a long association with Wittenberg Door. As a Wittenberg Door fan, I really wanted to vote for Ole, but I have to vote for Dr. Ergun Kaner. It annoys me to no end when people say that all monotheistic religions are basically the same. It's not even close. It's like arguing that all centralized governments, such as republics, fascism, monarchy, etc., are the same. It's just horrible. Yeah, when you put it that way, Chris, you're right. It doesn't make any sense. All right, there's another one for Ergun Kaner, and an almost vote for Ole Anthony. It's Soundbite of the Week. This one comes from Don. He writes via the email, I vote for soundbite number 2. That makes it 3 for Dr. Ergun Kaner. And this is a very important point for Christians to better understand the difference between Christians and Muslims, writes Don. Don, thanks for the email. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Margaret, with no comment. Oh, Margaret, please tell us why. Email us back. She says soundbite number 2. That's 4 for Dr. Ergun Kaner and soundbite number 2. But Margaret, please email us back at issuesetc.org and tell us why it's your soundbite of the week. Just put it in one sentence. It won't hurt anything. So that's 4 votes for soundbite number 2, Dr. Ergun Kaner reacting to those who say that Muslims and Christians worship the same God. And that's 1 for Dr. Richard Stuckwish, soundbite number 3 on the Christian message behind the Harry Potter novels. Let's play again. Let's see. Let's start with the top vote getter, if we could. This is soundbite number 2, if you would, Buzz. Dr. Ergun Kaner. I asked him, what did he think when he heard people say that Muslims and Christians worship the same God?
No Muslim in his right mind would ever believe this. It's usually just some touchy-feely, scratch and sniff Christian, quote unquote, who spouts this type of silliness. Hey, you know, we're talking about the same God. There's never been one Muslim, and I've had now, I'm coming up, approaching my 100th debate, I have never met a single Muslim who believes that the Allah of the Quran and the Jehovah God of the Bible are the same God. Look, they deny the Father heart of God, they deny the divinity of the Son, they deny the person of the Holy Spirit. Exactly what part of God do they get right? They deny the Trinity itself, they deny the divinity of the Son, the God-man nature, his atoning work, Him as the Lamb, the Agnus Dei. Exactly when do we draw the line and say, you know, maybe they modified it. Islam is medieval Mormonism. It's exactly what it is. You cannot change the nature of God and still be talking about the same God. But Joseph Smith and Muhammad did the exact same thing. They studied the nature of God as professed in Christianity and then denied him and made one up out of whole cloth.
All right, here's soundbite number 3. This comes from Dr. Richard Stuckwish on the Christian message behind the Harry Potter novel.
I think that Rowling was purposely subtle, that she didn't broadcast this, although she's always been honest about it, I believe, when she's been asked about it. I personally believe that once the last book comes out, a lot of these things are going to be far more obvious. I think that Harry is finally going to defeat Voldemort by sacrificing himself, and that this is the way in which Voldemort's defeat is going to be accomplished, and that in one way or another, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, Harry will be shown to live after death, because this whole notion of the resurrection and the life after death is prominent.
That's soundbite number 3. It's got 1 vote, and then there are the 2 that have no votes yet. First, soundbite number 1, Ole Anthony. Answering a simple question. A salesman comes to you, wants to sell you something. His business card's got a Jesus fish on it. Are you more or less likely to buy from him and do business with him?
Well, either way, you've got to do the due diligence. I would even go further. Anyone that says they're a Christian store, you shouldn't buy from them. You can no more have a Christian store than you can have a Christian tree.
Soundbite number 1, Ole Anthony, and here's the other one that still is waiting for votes. Bob Lico, one question he would ask Word Faith teacher Marilyn Hickey.
I would ask her why every month, and I've been on her mailing list, although recently I've been taken off, but I have been on her mailing list in the past for years, every month she would send out a new point of contact, whether it was a plastic replica widow's mite, blessed water, anointed oil, pieces of thread. I have all of these things, and I would ask her why she sends these gimmicks out to people every month, and she'll say in her letters, these are not gimmicks, the Lord has directed me to do this. Well, if the first one worked in January, why do I need one in February? She uses a company out of Tulsa that generates these things. It's the same company that Bob Tilton uses, because they get the same gimmicks from both ministries with almost identical letters.
All right, let's go back to the phones. That was soundbite number 4. A few more minutes left here. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and still plenty of time to call and play soundbite of the week. Steve wants to play in West County. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how you doing today?
Very well.
Hey, you know what? The first one, I'm not going to call Sound by the Week, but years ago there was a Christian musician called Steve Taylor. And he used sarcasm. He talked about people who'd only drink milk from a Christian cow.
Yeah.
The facts mean I said, I'm going to go with Bob Leko.
Oh, you are. So you almost voted for Ole Anthony.
That'd be like 5% of a vote, but 95% for
Bob Leko? Why soundbite number four?
Well, consider this. How are those gimmicks any different than having a JP2 toilet paper holder in your bathroom when he came to St. Louis to visit?
That's a great point.
Oh, by the way, do me a favor. When you interview this gal coming up, ask her what man's basic problem is, because when you ask that question basically of Robert Schuller. When you ask a question of Schuller, you learned his whole theology there. I think if you ask that question, you may find that's going to lead to all types of interesting places.
I think so, too. We always ask a question like that no matter what the interview is, and you can rest assured, Steve, thanks for playing. Diane calls from her car. Hi, Diane.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm going to put in a vote for Dr. Stucklish just because I think it warrants at least one more vote.
All right, and beyond that, do you agree, disagree with his thoughts on the Harry Potter novels?
I don't know that I totally agree. I think it's very interesting and an innovative concept that he's coming up with. I have read the books. I've enjoyed them. My girls got me hooked on them. They've read them and enjoyed them and enjoyed the movies as well. I see a lot of symbolism in them. I think she has put together an excellent combination of criteria for a children's literature, but I don't know that I'd go as far as what he's saying, but you could be right, and it's very intriguing.
All right, Diane, thank you very much. You know, wouldn't it be something after all of these novels, I mean, after all these books have been written, after all the websites have been put up, after all the concerns and periodical articles have been written by Christians saying the Harry Potter novels are there to lure your children into the occult, that it turns out that the books really were more in the line with C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. I mean, if Dr. Stucklish is right, it might well be that Christians might have to eat some crow. The Christian critics might have to eat some crow when everything is said and done. I got to give away a travel mug, and I think I'm going to give it to Chris. I had three people marked off, but I got it. Hey, Buzz agrees with me. I got to give it to Chris. His email was very insightful, and I love those kind of insights. Why people can't tell the difference between one religion and another. They wouldn't make that mistake when it came to governments. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., Islam will be the subject. Dr. Ergun Kaner and Dr. Alvin Schmidt together talking about that. On Sunday night, we'll be talking about rapture theology. Dr. Reed Lessing will be our guest. That's 91.5 FM here in St. Louis from 10 to 11 on Sunday night. And then Monday, the beginning of a three-part daily series on the Nicene Creed. Pastor Peter Bender will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.